It's a little like Ridian's marble knife. I mean, do you really need a great big honking folding blade? No, you don't, but yes, you do.
All right, welcome back to the Catch Pitch Show, everyone. This is one of your co-hosts, Mike Moran, and I'm joined tonight by Neil Pinchard. Hi there, Neil.
Mike, hello.
Hello. And third co-host tonight, surprise guest, we've got Ridian Catrill. Hi, Ridian.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's been like a year, almost a year to the day.
Is that right?
Well, maybe a month off, but close enough.
Well, then I think it's happy podcast birthday.
Yeah, right. This year's a little different. We got 29 days in February, so
yep.
All those kids that had their birthdays on the 29th, they get to celebrate this year.
Leap children.
Now, we usually like to talk a little bit of truck talk, and Neil, we haven't talked for a little bit, but I was in San Diego recently, and I would say second to Hawaii. Hawaii definitely is the Tacoma capital of the world, no doubt. But San Diego's running a close second right now. And you need that because their roads are terrible. The city's turned into a drug haven. I got lots of photos and videos of people doing drugs out on the street. Streets I used to roam. It's a different town, but I'm proud to say that the truck scene is nice and healthy there, maybe out of necessity.
Well, living in Minnesota, we pretty much need four-wheel drive to get around anywhere, except for this year. I mean, we've had no snow. Today was 65 degrees, so I haven't had a chance. I don't think I put my truck in four-wheel drive since I bought it new 6 months ago. So I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, you buy a truck so you can say, hey, watch this. And there's been no watching this. It's just like I'm just puttering down a dry road alongside of 5,000 other pickup trucks. And we're all just like, oh man, I wish there was something we could, you know, get stuck in. But not here, not this year.
Still early. Still end of February. You still got time. You got a chance. Get yourself a couple feet of snow. So what are the kids doing, like all the kids that play hockey on the ponds and stuff? What are they doing for the winter?
They're swimming.
Right.
You know, that makes sense. You used to see, you know, ice, you know, hockey sticks, and now I just see snorkels. So, I mean, I think the kids are having just as much fun, but they're, you know, they're in the lake instead of on top of the lake. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird to see them swimming with their skates on. But it seems awkward.
Water polo, isn't that what they call it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people think I'm kidding, but the lakes are mostly all open. I mean, there's ducks and geese, and I got to imagine we're going to have a pretty phenomenal wildlife season this spring because it's been so mild and, you know, deer and raccoon and even coyotes live around us. They got to be just populating like crazy. I mean, there's lots to eat. There's been no cold to put them down. So I think we're going to have a big wildlife season this year.
All right. Well, that was biologist Neil.
Biology 101. Yep.
Ridian, do they still allow, I can't remember, do they let Canadians have trucks anymore? Or? Do they let you have one or not?
Oh yeah, it's mandatory up here. Well, at least where I live, it is for sure. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I've got a Tacoma too. You know.
Oh, you do not.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Serious? I have an 08. An 08. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four wheel drive. You know, four door. I guess it's TRD Sport. I don't know. I can't remember TRD yep. Something.
How many miles?
Just past 220,000 kilometers.
Wow.
So
that's
miles
like
is that?
9,000 miles, maybe?
47 miles, kilometers to miles.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to. I'm not even actually sure what that is, but it must be about 150,000 miles.
Oh, so you're still in the break-in period for the truck?
Yeah,
yeah. Hopefully, yeah. No, it's going strong. Yeah.
Now that particular generation, they had some rust issues on the frame. You're in good shape there.
So when I bought it, I didn't check close enough. I mean, it wasn't like there was serious rust underneath on the frame or anything, but I actually had it inspected and they said, oh, you know, everything seems okay. But I got a little paranoid and then called up Toyota, and it hadn't had any of that coatings and all that stuff that they do for free, new shocks or new springs. It had a bunch of recalls I had done. So I got the coating and the springs and, so it's fine. It's definitely not broken in half or anything like that yet. So.
Right. Yeah.
Did you hose clamp a couple of the 2x4s under the frame then?
Yeah.
I think that's what was the fix in backups.
The Canadian fix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, welcome to the club, Rid. That's great to have you. It's ever growing.
Yeah,
it's a good vehicle.
It is
around
good.
Town
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
You know, I was driving around downtown San Diego for a weekend and I was glad to have that truck. It was easy to get around in.
That's not your local town though now, is it?
No, I'm in Arizona, which is east of California. Right. So it's about a 6-hour drive or so through the southern desert, which is fun. A lot of it follows the border wall, which is cool, and goes through the sand dunes and Neil, I thought a lot about you. I saw a lot of people heading to Baja.
Yeah.
To have some fun. So.
Yeah. So I'm curious, is that the closest grocery store for you then, Mike, is San Diego or?
My closest grocery store is a little bit of a drive.
Because you did say you're kind of out in the sticks. So I figured maybe it was a, 4 or 5 hour drive to get your Cheerios and your Wonder Bread.
All right. No, it's a little closer than that, but. You know, speaking of grocery store, I did get to drive by like through all the fields where all of the America's vegetables are grown in the wintertime.
Yep.
So tons of different, I never even seen so many varieties of lettuce. So it was kind of interesting to see it. And it's being harvested right now and kind of fun to see.
Getting ready to ship it up here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure it does.
I think most of our vegetables come from down there.
Yeah.
Seems that way.
Yeah.
At least the ones that are priced reasonably.
Yeah.
we can't buy our own veggies.
I got to imagine you get tired of eating those pine cones, just day in and day out. It's
beaver tails and pine cones.
Beaver tails.
Yeah. I mean, you do want to eat food grown in the southern United States this time of year, right? Like you don't want to go to your grocery store and buy sweet corn grown in Canada in February. That would be a little suspect.
Yeah, we only have about 2 months of sun up here anyway. So,
yeah.
So you can't grow too much in 2 months of sun. Yeah.
That was fun. That's what I've been up to, Neil. Little side trip over to San Diego.
Now, did you leave the boys alone or did you have a sitter come in or?
Yeah, we flew in some grandparents.
Okay.
Keep those kids corralled up.
Were they your grandparents or just any grandparents?
Yeah, just random. I took an ad out on whatever, Facebook. Yeah. And
Rent a grandma?
You can get everything on the marketplace there.
Yeah.
The boys have been doing some hiking lately. So we're surrounded by these like mesas around where I live and they're not really marked on maps, but there's Indian ruins on almost all of them.
Yeah.
So petroglyphs, all that kind of stuff, foundations, really neat stuff. So they've been hiking those almost every day up there looking for treasures, checking things out. It's pretty neat.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My oldest son's been living in Scotland and he's heading off to Nepal with his new wife in less than a month, and they're going to hike the Nepal mountains for, I don't know, 2 weeks. They've got a thing all set up and they're going with another couple that are good hikers and campers. So I'm excited to hear his stories and pictures, and sounds kind of neat.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to acclimate for a few days? Scotland's not necessarily a high elevation.
It's not high elevation, but they're in their mid 20s. So I think they're going with youth and enthusiasm. so I think they'll be fine. Yeah. Well, Mike, what are you making knife wise?
Just making knives, Neil, just making knives.
I just saw a real pretty, not a caramel, but what color was that? Kind of an off.
Oh, some yellow, butterscotch, some old
butterscotch, paper, butterscotch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really pretty. It was a nice color combination with the metal.
Yeah, I like that stuff. It's fun to work with some of the older stuff. Pretty sure it's got asbestos in it or something nasty, but hey. You know, I just hold my breath.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but it finishes real nice. I'm sure Ridian knows about that, but.
Yeah, it's good. Paper micartas are nice, really nice. The old stuff is good.
The old stuff is a lot better than newer stuff, yeah.
Very stinky. Some of it's really stinky.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets in your fingers, the smell. Like, you can't even wash it out.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's some of that older stuff's nasty. I just ground into some old canvas this weekend. And it is, I mean, it stank the shop up. I came back in here day and a half later and it still just stinks in here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm not sure what's in there. I don't want to know, really.
No.
Dust collector's on and I'm not getting too close to it.
Yeah. I was thinking actually, maybe, have you done an episode on safety? No,
safety? We throw all caution in the wind here on the Catch Bitch show.
Yeah, because I was telling Neil I ground my part of my finger off today.
Yeah, as we're talking right now.
You know, nice segue. That. Good segue into the...
Rudy has got a paper towel taped around his finger, his middle finger. Almost makes me think this is contrived, but he wants to talk about safety, I guess. Would you stick that in your belt grinder or your bandsaw? What'd you do?
Belt grinder, yeah. I was thinning some mammoth. And I usually put some tape on the back of it, you know, and I hold the piece of tape and get in. And it was working just fine. And I thought, I could probably use a new belt, 50 grit belt. So I put a new 50 grit belt on there, which was removing the material a lot faster. But then it just caught and slipped out of my finger, and my middle finger went sideways into the belt. So fresh 50 grit belt. Yeah. So that didn't feel good. There's like a bevel on my middle finger now. Yeah.
Oh. It's funny how fast it grows back though. You know, I do some of the dumbest things, and I freehand grind my blades. I just hold them with my fingers. Mm-hmm. And I use the first knuckle. I don't know what you call it. I think in the medical field, they call it the distal inner carpal maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I use that knuckle and I hold the blade on it, and the knuckle goes into the belt as I'm grinding. So by the time I'm done with the blade, it's just like a fine red there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like capillary blood.
Yeah.
And that's just how I do it. I don't know. I'm not going to change my ways, but I grind that skin off for every blade. It grows back in a day. You're back in business.
Yeah. This is more than a day. I think this injury, but almost the bone. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't good. Yeah.
So I'm curious, Ridian, did it hurt instantly or did it not hurt until a little later when you actually thought about it or the blood started pumping or
yeah, your it's
blood
later.
Said later?
Yeah.
I've always found that the worse you hurt yourself, the least it hurts to begin with. It's like your brain just basically shuts down and goes, no, we're not going to deal with this right this second. We're going to think about it, and then later it'll hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Is it throbbing now? Yeah, the shock, yeah.
That's the shock, yeah. Yeah, it is a little bit, yeah. I took an Advil earlier to kind of dull the pain, but yeah, it was throbbing for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's what bourbon's for.
Bled pretty well.
Take an Advil.
Yeah.
stick take your a shot of in bourbon, the bourbon or
turn the grinder back on, stick your finger in there.
Yeah, there was a nice, like, it was a nice clean little like line of where my finger had gone into the belt that brushed all of the dust off the belt, you know. With some little bits of skin, there was like skin on there. My son helped me bandage it up.
Huh. And don't tell mom about this now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to hijack this conversation for a minute. We're looking at Ridian's background. He's got all these awards on his wall, just showing off, but well-deserved awards. You've got a, and I don't want to do, we don't do ads here, but I noticed that you have a little bottle of oil there.
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Action Oil.
Action Oil. It's a clear oil. And I use it as well. I use it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's from Knife Joy, isn't it?
I don't know where it came from because it was Evan Nicolaitis gave it to me at Blade Show West. He said, "Have you tried this oil?" And I said, "No, I hadn't seen it." So he brought me this bottle. I don't know where.
Is he like selling it on the side?
I don't know. He ran off and came back with it and gave it to me. So yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's like a thick, a nice little needle on the end of it to, get where you need it to go.
Yeah, nice little applicator, kind of like a nano oil or something like that.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
The reason I wanted to mention that is I knew right away what it was when I saw a distinctive label, but I have had a couple of knives come back that are just destroyed. And guys have been using grease. I guess there are, I'm not a modern folder guy, but I guess there are pretty popular greases used on modern folders. And guys have been using them on slip joints, and I do not recommend that. So go with some oil, go with some Action Oil or Knife Pivot Lube or Nano Oil, or go on down to your hardware store and get some two-stroke oil. But this is my public service announcement. Stop putting grease in your knives. I don't care what the manufacturer says.
Yeah, what the best for slip joints would be, you know? I mean, I use 3-in-1. I've used 3-in-1 for a long time. When I'm assembling a knife, I'll use like actual assembly lube from building my V8, which was left over, and that works great. But for prolonged use, I don't know, for slip joints. Because it's not like you're trying to have a bearing move in there. You've got two metal contacts like rubbing against each other.
Yeah. But you're also trying to repel dirt at the same time, the best you can. Mm-hmm. And I don't think grease is the way to do that. I've never seen grease repel dirt very well. Mm-hmm. Over time, it builds up and attracts it. That's my Neil. You want to weigh in, or you're going to sit this one out?
I have some oil that I get from Walter at Latama, and I don't remember the name, but it's really good oil. And it works great on you know, blade pivot pins, joints, anything that moves. I feel bad. I can't remember the name, but it's a phenomenally good oil. And I'm sure it's similar to what Ridian just showed. But it is amazing what a really good oil will do. Like you say, you have a knife that's kind of stiff, the action's kind of stiff, and a really good quality oil, it's like magic. It's like, holy cow, this thing feels like now it's on bearings. You know, it makes the action so much better. But I agree with Mike. No grease. I mean, I can't think of anything worse than grease. I mean, you're picking up pocket lint, and I mean, it would just be a magnet for all kinds of crud and dirt and crap. It just seems horrible.
Yeah. That's my opinion. I don't know. There's probably some grease scientist out there ready to argue about it, but stop putting grease in your knives.
So back to Ridian's background there. Ridian, I see 4 plaques up there. What are those awards for? And I've been with you when you've won a couple, but...
Yeah, well, all 4, actually, because those are from the Oregon Knife Show last April, 2023. Okay.
But you have won something since, didn't you?
I won Best Folding Knife at Blade West.
Right.
Which was in October, yeah.
Okay.
So that was pretty awesome.
And where is that plaque or trophy?
That one's downstairs, actually.
You have a separate shrine downstairs?
Yeah, my trophy room. Yeah. You have a second in my trophy room. Yeah.
Huh. Will you be collecting some more? Do you plan on collecting some more plaques this year? Are you going to Oregon?
I am going to Oregon. Yeah.
Are you going to let any guys, other guys win awards? Or are you going to just do them all in? What's your plan? You're going to make some fixed blades, take it all?
I thought about making fixed blades, but no, I don't know. We'll see what I do. I'm not sure. Cause there was like a miniature that I won that, and I don't know if I'll make a miniature this year. But we'll see.
That's right.
I mean, that was my first, the teeny tiny guy. It was right here.
Yeah. It's like pearl handled thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
miniatures are tough to sell, aren't they? I mean, Mike and I have talked about this before too, I think. It's just, as a collector of old knives, I have several miniature, really nice miniature knives, but there isn't a huge demand. If you've talked to other collectors out there, everybody goes, oh, that's neat, but I'm not going to pay the kind of money it would take to buy something, you know, and miniatures are so extremely difficult to make, obviously, as you guys know, but just not a huge seller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they are fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a very niche thing. I mean, pocket knives in general are kind of a niche thing. So when you get down a little rabbit hole of that. Yeah.
We've talked about this before, but the grain of rice knives that Neil, you and I handled a few grain of rice knives that were multi blades, all of them. Like there was a lot, Whittler, there was a couple horsemen's, and literally the size of a grain of rice. And that guy was Canadian, and I'm so lazy, I haven't looked his name up to cement it in my memory, but he's no longer with us.
Yeah, he passed away quite a few years ago. Yep.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah,
to see, like, if you can imagine a horseman's knife that is so small that if you drop it in the carpet, who knows if you'll find it again. And it's got blades that have swedges on them.
Yeah.
That small. With half stops. It's nuts. Nuts. Yeah.
You need a tiny grinder for that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a 2 millimeter, like 2 millimeter by 72 millimeter.
Little Lego figures holding the knives up to the grinder. Everything's in miniature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking, Radian, if you want to start making miniatures, the injuries to your fingers are going to really decrease.
That's true. Yeah.
That's right. It's more like acupuncture at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. My eyes will go, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've established that I'm just doing tomfoolery in the shop. What are you working on right now, Rid?
So I had just finished 3 Rogue Waves, well, 2 Rogue Wave Trappers and 1 Warncliffe. And then I'm trying to finish 2 Dippers, which in the Dipper is like my kind of modernized slightly version of the Sheep's Last Dip knives that I made.
Love
with Charlie Campagna. And then before that, I finished this marble safety knife, which is right here.
Oh, before you get to that, do you have any of the other ones that you can show us that you were just talking about?
Yeah. So this one is this is what I call a Rogue Wave Trapper. This one is with rag micarta.
Shadow pattern, no bolsters.
This one's shadow, yeah. And then the other one is some kind of burl that's dyed green. I think it's birch, but I'll have to double check what it is. It might be maple.
Very nice.
What are you going to write on it? Like if somebody asks you, you're just going to write wood?
Wood. Burl wood. I think it's written. I think it is written on the block that I have.
You just got to find it. Yeah.
Yeah. And this one has the Warncliffe blade. And that's like a vintage linen with sort of a liner.
Have you done that blade shape before? I haven't seen it.
I've made, I think, 4 or 5 maybe with this. Yeah.
I love that.
So same handle as the others, but just with the Wharncliffe blade. Yeah. Cause I did one that was a Trapper and Wharncliffe, you know, like a Wharncliffe Trapper with two blades. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's just the single. Yeah.
Have you made any of those patterns with a rear bolster?
No, I've done it with bolsters. Like I put bolsters on, but do you mean like bolsters and caps? Like,
a bolster cap on the rear. I just thought it would look kind of nice because you have that big round pivot pin and the handle shield. I look at those knives and I like them, but I'm thinking if I ordered one, I'd want some kind of a rear cap bolster just to kind of have in my own eye, a little better flow to the whole knife. I mean, I love that shadow pattern. It's still beautiful, but it almost looks like it needs something on that back end.
Yeah, yeah. No, I haven't actually, but it would, yeah. Would work.
Here we go, Red. Here comes the custom order sneaking into your custom direct messages. Orders. I'd really like to have that knife, but could you just do a bolster? It's slippery slope.
And if then, you make you know, one of those, would you mind using quartz?
If you would, you do quartz for my kitchen counter? If I cut you a piece,
of course, anything for you, Neil.
Anything.
Yeah.
No, but, those are very cool.
Thanks. Yeah.
Are you going to just hold on to those knives forever? Are you going to take those to a show or what are you going to do with them?
Oh, yeah. So, well, the plan was to kind of stockpile a bit of knives for this Eugene show, which is in April. I never know too much or too much ahead of how like other work will be for the next month and a bit. So kind of start early.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Making some, yeah. Like if I have more time, then I'll. Then I'll make more and then I can let some go before I go down there. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. But
great way to do it.
Better to have some ahead of time. Yeah, I'm still part-time, so
yeah,
not every day.
Part-time and air quotes, I bet you're putting 40 hours a week in.
Well, it depends on what other work, but yeah, like I'll work in the garage in the evenings most of the time.
Okay.
Most days and then weekends and stuff when I have the time, but yeah, it varies. Depends on other work. Today I was in the garage, ground my finger off and then my day ended early. So yeah, the day job's been a little slow for the past week and a bit. So I was able to finish those off and then have these other two that are on the go and then we'll see what's up after that. Yeah.
Huh. Have we talked about your day job? Are we allowed to talk about your day job?
Sure, you can. Yeah, I think I mentioned it before. Yeah, I do like graphic design and illustration. I went to school for animation art school. It's called Emily Carr in Vancouver. It's kind of like one of the Vancouver or Canada top art schools, I guess.
Okay.
And I went for animation. So I kind of went into that career doing more self-employed work, like smaller animation jobs for the internet and that kind of stuff. And illustration work, graphic design. I do a lot of labels for beer companies, like craft beer packaging.
Fun. Super fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you working for a company presently or is this all on your own?
It's on my own. It's like I do sort of, I guess, contract work or whatever, but I have clients that I've worked with for years now, so they kind of keep me busy. Yeah, I'm not actively like seeking other clients. Yeah.
Have you always been independent, kind of have that streak to you, or have you worked for employers before?
I've pretty much been on my own, although I worked with my dad who was in exhibit design years ago. I did some of the designs for like building display cases and exhibiting artifacts or whatever it was. Yeah, so I was doing that with him. But and that was also at some animation jobs for that and graphics and, you know, brochure work and logos and all that kind of thing. Pretty much any artistic stuff that comes my way, I pretty much have always said, sure, I can try and do that. Yeah.
So, nice. Very cool.
Speaking of your dad, I had such a great time talking with him last year at Eugene. Is he coming back this year with you to the show?
I think he is, yeah. I've mentioned it to him, and I think he's around, so we'll see. But I believe so, yeah. He's away right now. He's in Egypt.
Egypt. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. My parents went to Egypt for a holiday. So, yeah.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
Are they doing like the usual, like the Cairo stuff and all that kind of thing?
We're on WhatsApp. And so they're sending pictures every day of, you know, pyramids and ruins and everything. Yeah. It's really neat.
Nice. They're going to do a river cruise?
That's
on my list, my bucket list, little river cruise.
Yeah, they did that. They were on a river cruise, and then they went to Jordan. I think they might be in Jordan now, or they've come back. I don't know. But there's apparently tons of ruins in Jordan as well. So,
did they go on a camel ride?
Yep, they did that too. Yeah. They sent pictures of that. My mom sitting on the camel, holding her hand up, holding the pyramids in the background. You know, like from the peak of the pyramid. Yeah. So they're enjoying their retirement and all that. So.
Oh, very neat.
One of the best, Neil, I have sent you this link. Have you watched this? One of the best videos on YouTube. One of the only reasons YouTube should exist is there is a documentary on these pigeon racers in Cairo.
Yes. You sent me that about 2 years ago.
Yeah. You want to go down a rabbit hole. Type in Cairo. I don't know what you want to type in. Cairo pigeon racing. These guys, there's a great documentary. I can't remember who made it, but it follows a few guys who do pigeon racing in the city and some rival street gangs that fight over pigeons and all kinds of stuff. It's one of the greatest videos that I've ever seen. So check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to find out.
Well, Radian, now I want to see that knife, the marbles style.
Yeah, you teased us with this marble safety knife.
Mm-hmm.
So how did this come about? How did you decide to make this?
So I was talking with Master Smith, Tommy Gann. So he's in Texas, I guess, and he forges his own Damascus and makes Bowie knives and all that. And we were talking about doing a trade, and he said he could make some Damascus for me for a knife and forge it to shape whatever I wanted. And I thought, well, if I'm going to have a master smith make some Damascus for me, I should probably come up with something that's a little bigger and better than a smaller knife, you know, like a trapper or something like that. And I had already always wanted to make one of these marble safety knife. I'd seen, you know, the old antique ones before. And so I thought, well, that would be really cool. To do that, because the blade is extra large and, you know, all the extra pieces of, you know, steel in there would show off the Damascus. So I drew up the pattern and then sent him the pattern. He forged the blade to hit like the Damascus to the shape of the pattern so that it kind of goes up into the tip, you know, the forged to shape. And it's, a Turkish twist pattern, which is like a 4-bar twist Damascus. So that's kind of how it came about.
Did you have an actual model to have in hand, an old marbles model?
No. Basically, I just looked for images on the internet, and I drew up from photos, like I traced photos. What's that? You're holding up there. Yeah, that's this like was, an original.
That's an original, and I just hope you can see that.
So Neil's got a copy of a old catalog cut, and man, Radiance is spot on close.
It's amazingly similar, and the blade shape is so close, and obviously that shows that you really did some research as to what the originals look like. Mike had told me about this knife last week. I'm so illiterate when it comes to Instagram and all these things. I had no idea this was out there. So just before the show, I went to Instagram and looked up this knife, and it's like, holy crap, is that cool? And there again, I always feel bad that we're doing an audio only show, because Radiant is showing us this knife now, and I can't express how neat, how beautiful, how cool the Damascus is, and the whole knife itself. It's just the package is just amazing.
Thanks.
Very cool.
Thank you so much.
Very Thanks. Amazing. Yeah, and that Damascus is killer too. I don't even like Damascus, but I love that.
I do too, Mike.
It's a pretty wild pattern.
Yeah, It just looks right on that knife. I mean, it just looks like it's at home there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like a bit lower layer or whatever they call it. Low layer, but it's, like I said, Turkish twist.
So Ridian, can you talk us through, we got to have a little history. Did you do a little historical research?
So when I was like, I had seen these knives before and then, thought, oh, okay, I'll try and make one. So I found a bunch of pictures online and they did have, patent drawings online, for, I guess, the original 1903 patent of this knife. And I don't think that was linked to marbles at the time, but, and even the blade shape is slightly different, maybe a different handle shape. But the idea is there where there's this catch piece that folds out and allows that if the blade is longer than the handle, the blade can then fold down past the handle and the tip sticks below the handle and sits in that catch piece, right? I don't know what they'd actually call that, but, and then the cool thing is then, so once that's like, so it's closed and your tip is hidden in that catch piece, but then as you open it, you then can fold up that catch piece and then it sits in the handle and acts as a lock, which I guess is why the marbles called it the safety knife, because it was now it's a slip joint, but this lock folds up and locks into the tang at the bottom, which is square because there's a half stop on the blade, and that's square, and then it now like lock.
Yeah, marbles touted it as super stout, as almost like a fixed blade knife when that bit was in there, whatever we want to call that thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is like a fixed blade for sure.
Yeah. And it's got a swing guard too. So is that your first swing guard? Have you done one of those?
It is my first one. Yeah. So yes, it does have a swing guard. There's a few different versions of the knife. I think, I don't know if it was marbles or the original one, like you showed Neil, which has like this clip blade, but there's another one where the blades are, I guess it's maybe a drop point and then even the swing guard is different as well. There's one where it's a single piece guard. So instead of being two pieces, like one on the front and one on the back that are separate, it's actually one piece that goes right to the, like they connect on the back, if that makes sense. So that when, like it's hard to describe it, but as you close it, it's still connected here, right? And then, and so it actually is all one piece. Anyway, I decided to go with the two piece just because of it's a little bit simpler. And I actually like the shape of this. Yeah, the marbles one are flat. They're not shaped, you know, they're just like flat pieces of metal.
But this knife's affectionately known as the marble safety knife in the knife world, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was marbles that either bought the patent or, I mean, I don't know the history with the patent side of it, but I guess they had it. And they still make them. Like, you can still buy them today.
So I'm just holding this up, but it says the Marbles Safety Hunting Knife.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. They started reproducing these probably about 20 years ago, I'm guessing. I don't know if that was a Parker deal. I'm not sure who, you know, bought the rights or bought the name. And it's a neat idea that, I mean, that knife has been around since, I believe the 1700s. But I think Marbles was the first one that I can think of in the early 1900s. That had that extended piece that you would fold out to cover the tip of the blade, where the old ones were really held in a sheath, and you know that you could use the knife as a short knife or as a long dagger folded open. But I can't think of any before the marbles that had that cool piece that would fold out and cover the tip when the blade was in the folded position.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think marbles was the first one to do that, but a neat idea. And my goodness. And Reed, you were telling me earlier that stag came from somewhere in the Eastern Bloc, Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually red stag.
The good stuff.
Not sambar stag, which nowadays, getting sambar stag here that's large, you know, big pieces is actually pretty tricky or really expensive. So you can get red stag in larger scales. So yeah, that's what I used. It has a slightly different look to sambar stag. Like maybe the little nubs on there, the popcorn
right,
is smaller.
Right.
So it was a toss up. I do have a piece of Sandbar Stag that would have fit too, but I actually like the tiny popcorn on this better.
It Red seemed Stag to fit is way better to go for pocket knives.
Oh, it looks
It's great. Funny how much time I waste like deciding handle material. Like I will seriously spend hours and hours staring at two or three pieces of stuff just to finally decide what to go with. Like, yeah,
looks like you made some good choices here.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it was a good choice for sure. Yeah.
So thanks. Marbles, I don't want to put you on the spot, Rid, but Marbles advertised this knife with, even though it had the little, whatever you want to call it, that safety bit that the end of the knife folded into. They sold it with a leather pouch, and I have yet to see any leather pouch from you.
Yeah. I have the zipper pouch. See?
Yep.
No.
Zipper pouch.
I think you gotta do the whole thing.
For the esteemed collector, zipper pouch. Yeah, I could make a pouch. I mean, the thing with leather slips and pouches is they do kind of scratch bolsters.
Oh, totally.
So. It's like, yes, it would complete the package, but then if someone's putting it in and out of the leather, like eventually it will get scratched.
So all these little micro scratches all over your bolsters. Yeah.
Yeah.
No good.
Kind of my excuse, but.
So you're holding on to this thing, man. As soon as I made that sucker, I'd be selling the heck out of that. What's your plans? What are you going to do with this?
So I'll take it to Oregon. And then I'm hoping to go to Blade Show in Atlanta in June, and I'll take it to that, and then we'll see. I haven't got a table yet. I'm on a waiting list, but I'm optimistic about that. So we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'll sell it by Blade Show.
Ridian, how did the build process go from beginning to end? Did everything? Was the engineering pretty much what you expected? Was there any nightmares? Was there anything you thought, oh, this worked out better or this worked out worse, again, mm-hmm. from the complete build?
Let's see. Tommy said that this pattern would be good for a slip joint because when the Damascus is all mixed and twisted together, it makes actually this pattern is stronger than some others. Like if you have a mosaic pattern, you can have very, very fine, like almost impossible to see lines through there, cracks that could break. So a spring could break. So that's kind of why we went with the pattern. So, but even because of that, even with that, I was still nervous that the back spring would break while making it because the tang's pretty big compared to, a small knife, right?
Yeah, huge.
The tang is 3/8 wide at least, but nothing broke, which. Well, like I was super nervous the first time I actually tried to get the knife open and use the spring and all that. So nothing broke. So that was awesome. The bottom catch piece, this is a cam. There's a cam tang on this piece, this bottom safety bit that holds the tip. The blade is, does have a half stop. This piece is like a cam, right? And that the reason for that, which I guess makes sense, is that you don't want to have it half open and right. Then somebody shut the main and then right. Smack into the end of that, right? So it's kind of like your motion has to be one full, just right. To prevent it from getting hit. I milled out with a 3/32 end mill that slot in the catch piece, which took almost 3 hours to do because I was just doing it by hand and I was worried I was going to break my carbide, end mill. And I was like milling basically one or like 5/1000ths, back and forth at a time and doing it in, I had to do it in three steps because of the angles, like three angles. So I started it where it was in the vise like this, in the one angle and then, went back and forth and rotated a little more and then back and forth.
All the way down. Tedious.
And then, yeah, so it was almost 3 hours for that. And then, but that it was fine. And actually the mill, the end mill broke literally on like the last cut. Cause I was trying to go as deep as I possibly could into there. And the end mill of like cutting length was only like 3/8. But I maximized that. And then literally the last cut, the end mill exploded on me. So it was all good. So I got lucky there. And, yeah, I mean, it just worked out perfectly. Like literally nothing failed along the way. And that was, yeah, I couldn't believe it. The swing guard locked up. Yeah, it's like solid.
You said earlier he specifically made that blade with the pattern for the shape and the size that you were going to use. How about the guards and how about the end piece that catches the tip of the blade? Was there anything special? Did he do anything different to provide you with that material?
So what he did is because I had sent him the paper pattern, he printed it off and then cut out the pieces and laid them out onto the bars of Damascus that he sent me. So there wasn't really anything specific, I guess, but you want to keep the pieces inside the billet, like not super close to the edge, just because it could have like hairline cracks and stuff in there. But other than that,
I'm just thinking the pattern looks so good on both the folding guards and that rear catch piece that I didn't know if he specifically designed that to give that, a maximum Damascus look also.
I think if you just keep those pieces inside the center of the billet, you're going to get enough of the pattern. Yeah. Right, I mean, I think with the Turkish twist, the further you grind into it, like for the bevels of a blade, like as you get thinner into the center of your blade towards the edge.
Yep.
The pattern definitely changes. Like it gets more bold, I think. So it's like these stars and S shapes come out more versus on here where it's just flat. There's no bevel. So yeah, it's like the pattern's a little tighter on here. And then the back spring is also Damascus as well, which you kind of need to find the center of the billet as well. So you have your stars and all that stuff.
Right.
Line up down the center.
I really like that you kept the bolsters plain and not Damascus, because I think it would have been too busy. And I think there's a wonderful contrast between the stag, the plain bolsters, and the Damascus. I mean, it's almost like you're getting all these different flavors that blend together so nicely. I think so many times I see a Damascus knife and everything's Damascus and I go, it's just too much. It's too much going on. And and your knife has this beautiful break, you know, in the visual, I think, that just makes it look so nice.
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's, you don't want it all Damascus. I don't know. I mean, the other challenge too, if you have bolsters that are Damascus, you have to think about how your pin is going to show. And you either have a pin that's completely visible. You can have a domed pin. A lot of the French makers actually, they dome their pins on the bolsters, where it seems like Americans do, like they'll smooth them right off. But then when you etch, you're going to see that the pin is, if it's stainless, it's going to be visible, right? So I don't know. It's just a different aesthetic. Some guys actually figured ways of hiding that pin completely, where it's a screw construction, but it's like a hidden screw inside. But that was just going to get too complicated. So
that's where you drew the line, huh?
Yeah.
All the rest of this nonsense was simple enough.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like the plain stainless bolsters, yeah.
Well, they're not plain. You've dressed them up, you've threaded them. And
yeah, and I did like a reverse etch in there to make them darker, to kind of match the black of the Damascus.
Now, I assume that Evan has seen this knife, your nemesis, Evan. if that's going to be competing coming up at a couple of shows, I'm curious what Evan's doing. I don't know how we could possibly top that. Not this time around.
Oh, really? Boy, that sounds like a challenge.
I think there's always ways to top, for sure. I don't know. I mean, some of the multi-blades that people are making
Yeah, but as soon as the judges get that knife in their hand and open that humongous blade. Yeah. They're going to feel like real manly men, and they're going to say, Rid's got this one.
That's probably what they're
going to. Evan's going to come out with like some like 14 blade Sheffield exhibition thing. It's going to have little pearl handles. It's going to be like 3 inches. It's going to be dainty.
In a little leather purse.
And these guys are going to have that blade out, and they're going to feel very good. Testosterone's flowing.
Evan's going to walk up. It's going to be stuck in his belt on the side of his pants, and he's just going to pull that out like a Bowie knife, throw it on the table, and they'll go, yeah, that's it. You win.
Yeah, do that. First, you got to make that leather pouch that Marble's made.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you can do that. But then you could go up to the judge's table when you drop that knife off, the judge, and just slap it down. They might call the police on you for brandishing. I don't know. That thing's serious. It's got what do we call that? Turkish clip? Well, I call it Turkish clip. No?
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually. I think so.
What calls it? Why is it Turkish versus just a regular clip?
Part of it is the way that tip kind of curls up in the end. I think it's kind of I would say it's like a Bowie blade with a Turkish clip-esque look to it. Mm-hmm. And Riddy and I can't see the end of the blade. If you pull it back, yeah, keep going that way. Keep going. Yeah, there. I think that's kind of what Mike and I both look at. It almost looks like it has, a reverse, a reverse belly in the mm-hmm. blade edge. And then it has that nasty hook up at the tip. And to me, that's mm-hmm. where that Turkish clip kind of comes in.
It's a Turkish buoy.
Turkish mm-hmm. buoy clip.
New terminology.
New terminology from 150 years ago. Yeah, that's a great blade.
Thanks.
Be somewhere else when somebody pulls that out on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like big knives, actually. So,
although it's a process to deploy that thing. You got to pull out the blade, get the swing guard in place. Then you got to put that bit in there.
Yeah, you do.
And then you're ready to go to town.
It's heavy, too. I mean, it's the weight of a fixed blade knife. Like, it's serious. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even though the audience can't see this, I keep hearing that massive click when it comes open. And it's like, our audience is going to, they're going to hear the sound and go, yeah, that's got some serious weight.
Yeah.
There is something about the sound of a swing guard.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Neil, you'll know what I mean from
absolutely
switchblades, like swing guard switchblades.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They have a unique sound and
they do.
This almost does that same thing.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when it locks in. Yeah. I put little washers underneath the teeny tiny washers under the swing guard pin, you know, like underneath between the blades, just so they wouldn't rub on the blade.
Right, right.
And scratch the blade. Which was just another little detail. And then I finned down this catch piece just a bit so that it wouldn't scratch inside.
Right.
The handle as the liners. Yeah. And then, but the liners are relieved for the blade tang. Hmm.
Quite a piece, Radian. You done good.
You done good.
That knife hasn't been made a lot by custom makers. I know Bobby Tools made some.
Yeah, he's posted a picture. He made two, I guess. Yeah. I feel like I saw one years and years ago, on Blade Forums. But, I mean, it's just this, visual memory that I have from, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. I don't know who made it or what, if I'm right. I don't know.
Wouldn't surprise me if, Ken Erickson made one on a whim.
Yeah, but, or Bruce Bump, maybe. It has that kind of Bruce Bump flair. Yeah.
But certainly not many. I agree with Mike. I can't remember seeing a custom one from going back years. So
very cool. Well, how thick is the tang of that blade?
It is about 3/16. Yeah, it was a kind of I couldn't decide how thick to make it. And part of the reason it's that thick is because of this catch piece. And I knew I had to mill that lot out.
Yeah, you need big enough piece to mill. Yeah.
Yeah, mill and then leaving enough, liners basically on that catch piece. They have to be, thick enough that they're not going to bend or whatever. And although this is all heat treated, so it wouldn't bend. But yeah, it's stout. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, we look forward to seeing how many awards you win with that. It sounds like you're just going to take it around from show to show to win as many plaques. So you're running out of wall space in that room.
I don't know what are the rules.
Thankfully, you got that second trophy room that you filled out, so you got that going for you.
Yeah, we'll see. There's always a lot of competition at Blade Show, that's for sure. So can never expect too much.
But now that the marbles one is done, Do you have a future idea? Do you have something else brewing in your mind that you want to tackle?
I'd like, well, it wouldn't top this knife, but I'd like to make a split back whittler.
Oh, yeah.
I have the pieces or like the steel kind of cut out for that. So they'll probably start on that next week. I've never made a split back whittler. And after that, I don't know. We'll see. No plans for anything crazy like this one, but I don't know. Although I'd like to do another swing guard, something with a swing guard, lock back maybe.
You know, something else that I don't haven't seen any makers make, you know, even though Evan's been doing a few of the English pieces, there's some really cool German stuff too that exists that has more of that kind of, you know, utilitarian, you know, just serious using knife, but still has the cool flair, you know, shell extractor, you know, bolsters or, you know, different types of blades that you don't typically see on American knives or English knives. So maybe if you were looking for something unique, I could send you a few pictures of a few what I consider really cool old German knives for some inspiration.
Mm-hmm, sure. There are so many different knife patterns out there and like little neat innovative things that like something with a, what's that knife that has like a, for a pair of pliers on, like it's a slip joint with a pair of pliers or wire cutters. Those are neat. I don't know. We'll see.
That would be very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Some things just, you know, like inspire whatever. You just see something that you, it's like, ooh, that'd be cool to make.
That's right.
So, Mike, when you're thinning material, how do you do that? What is your like technique for holding like a piece of micarta or a piece of bone or stag or something and grinding the underside of it on your belt? Like I usually put a piece of tape and I loop a piece off that I hold, and this grinding my fingers off has literally been this.
I used to use the tape thing. Yeah, but I don't anymore. I just hold it with my fingers
and
support it, you know, kind of on the top of my knuckle here and just grind half of it and flip it and grind half of it. Usually just on my flat platen. I have a 4x36, like a cheap 4x36 grinder from like a home improvement store that I'll use after I hog all the material out to do a semi-flat, and then I'll go to my disc grinder to really flatten it.
Right. And would you put the piece against your rest, like your platen rest, just holding it?
I have two flat platens set up, one with a rest, one without. So I just go with the one without and put a 36 grit belt on there and start hogging.
So you're pretty much the same as me then, but I just...
Yeah, time is money type of thing.
I pushed too hard and it slipped and yeah. It's the second time I've done it too.
Yeah. I think you'll do it again probably. You know, just trying to get the bleeding to stop. It's super annoying. It's like, you know, you're trying to get the super glue to stick in there or whatever, you know, depends on where it is. And
So whenever I hurt myself, I get so mad at myself for being so dumb, you know, having, you know, how could you have done something so stupid? Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, even just like, why didn't you wear gloves, you idiot?
Yeah. You know, I do know guys have like, they thin that stuff down in their milling machine. It's like, that's too much of a process for me. And man, what a mess. And
Or a surface grinder or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing with stag, like you have to grind the back. So how do you hold that lumpy side?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Usually, and if it's stag, usually I've already heated it up and twisted it, bent it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get it to, especially if it's saddled, you know, you want to bend those ends down and then grind that off. So you preserve all the stag characteristics. You don't have a bunch of white or anything. Yeah. That's how I do it. I know there's better ways, safer ways, but I do what you do. I don't do the tape though, because the tape always falls off for me halfway through the thinning process. And then I get frustrated and make mistakes. Yeah. So I just slow the grinder down a little bit. I don't go crazy with the grinder, and I just hold it with my hands.
Yeah. I guess even actually holding it just without tape, you're almost going to be a little more careful because you know, you're not relying on that tape to hold it. You're just using your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you are more careful. It's been a while since I've really done something like that, but probably 3 years I've done, mm-hmm. you know, shoved in like a 36 grip, but yeah, I know I used to do it that way. I just, the tape, it would always fall off like halfway through. So.
Yeah. Well, especially from stag too, right? There's nothing to stick to.
Yeah. There's nothing.
You know? Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
Well, that's super cool. Rid, thanks for showing us that marble safety knife.
Hey, my pleasure.
I don't know if you're going to name it something else. I don't know, but
If
that's a good folks want to see it, they can. We'll make sure we have a link in it in the description. I'm guessing you still have that Instagram video up there.
Yeah. That video got more likes and comments and
I bet
passed around more than any other mess or any other video that I've posted, which is pretty neat. So
yeah, that thing. Thing's amazing. So we'll link to it if you haven't seen it. I'm guessing a lot of you have seen it. And if you've already seen it, hey, go watch it again. It's fun to watch. And then Rid, you'll have that knife at the Eugene show that's April, right?
Yes. I think it's April 12th. Is that right?
Okay.
12th, 13th, 14th, I'm thinking.
So be sure to go
it sounds
stop
right.
by his table. Well, we'll let these old men figure out the dates, but go stop by his table if you're at the Eugene show. Check out his knife. Put it in your hands. Feel like a man. Like a man's man. And then you're going to take it to Blade Show Atlanta as well. You're going to have a table there? You already set up there?
I'm not set up yet, but I'm hoping. Yeah, I was a little late. Yeah.
Okay. So you've not been accepted.
No. But I'm optimistic. I think I'm on a wait list for a table, but
now do I remember right that you can't share a table and display a knife? It has to be your own personal table.
Yes, yeah. I think like I could say this was a collaboration knife with Tommy Gann, and I think he has a table. So maybe I haven't even spoken to him about this, but
okay.
I think that would be fine, but. I wouldn't be able to enter it into like a slip joint category or anything right. like that because I don't have the table. Yeah.
It doesn't seem quite fair because if a guy is just bringing a knife display, you shouldn't have to buy a whole table. You think you could share a table with somebody else and say, look, I'm only using a portion of this, but I'm still paying a portion of it. And I still want to display the one knife I brought. I wish there was a way they could adjust that. Just to make it more fair. So like I said, you wouldn't have to buy a whole table just to enter one knife.
Yeah. I mean, that would be good, but I guess they, you know, they want to fill the place and.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll refrain from comments. I'm sure there are a few vendors that would probably don't need a plate show.
Some guys actually have, they'll get a booth. I think it's a booth.
Yeah.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they've got multiple guys in there.
Yeah, which seems I don't understand how that works, but
I'm sure those booths aren't cheap.
No.
All right. Well, hopefully Rid will be at Atlanta and you can come see it. Well, you're going to go no matter what, right?
I think so. Huh? Yeah. I'm like last minute guy. I haven't bought my ticket or my hotel or anything and I'll be hitchhiking on my way. Yeah.
He meticulously planned out every detail of this knife, but yet,
yeah.
This he doesn't know what he's doing
kick
tomorrow.
Me into gear. Yeah. Kick me into gear to book a hotel and a flight at least. Yeah. So, yeah. Are you going to be there, Mike? You going to walk around? And
I don't know yet. I've got, the move to Phoenix was pretty expensive and building the shop out was expensive. So this might be a recovery year. Honestly, I'm getting a little tired of going to Atlanta. I love the Blade Show. I just hate where it is. Wish they'd move that thing. Time to move the Blade Show. Atlanta's dumb. Move it somewhere else.
I'm trying to talk Mike into going to Eugene, and I fully understand that. That whole moving was costly and a big deal. But I mean, he's got a free couch to sleep on. I already told him he can ride in the trunk of our car. So,
right. First class.
All he's got to do is get himself there. You know, I mean, we'll have a loaf of bread. You can make bologna sandwiches. I mean, Mike, I hope that you can make it to Eugene.
How far is the drive? It can't be that far. If you can drive to
San Diego
in 6 hours, and isn't it just a little north?
He's got a new Tacoma. He can just put it on autopilot and, you know, curl in the back, take a nap. It's kind of like Tesla, I think. You just punch in your coordinates and go.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's too far to drive. I'm not a big fan of flying into Portland either, honestly.
Neil, you rented a car from the airport. Isn't it like a two-hour drive from...
It's about a two-hour drive. You can take a plane from Portland to Eugene. I did that 1 year, but it's more of a pain than it is. And I've always gone with at least one buddy over there. So, like I said, we just fly into Portland, rent a car, and it's a real easy drive from Portland to Eugene.
Oh, yeah, it's super easy to drive because everybody in Portland drives at about 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So... It's real easy. It's laid back driving. Laid back.
We wicked it up to 42, 43, I think.
Did you? Did you? Yeah. It's nice.
But I know Mike would love Eugene. I mean, I hate to keep putting pressure on you because I know it's probably not in the cards, but it is a great show.
Yeah. I might be a last minute ordeal on this. We'll see.
Okay.
I need to, I've got a note here on my wall to look at airline prices. So we'll see.
Okay.
Well, Rid, thanks for coming on and talking some knives tonight. And for the listeners, if you're still listening, thanks for sticking with us. I know this was, could have been a better of a visual show, I guess, but hey, audio is what we got. So, hope you enjoyed a little banter and a little inside scoop from Ridian on what he's got going on this year. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
You're making killer knives, man.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on here, and it's awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's been fun. All right. Well, thanks all for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.